The Money Show.
Personal finance with Warren Ingram.
Warren Ingram is a director at Galileo Capital. He is a personal financial advisor and gives us his time every Thursday night to talk to you about money and to help you make more sense of your money each and every single week on The Money Show. And at inflection points in our history, and they seem to be coming with greater rapidity, Warren Ingram, I think a lot of people, after the trials and tribulations of March, April last year, there was a lot of panic and a lot of money went offshore at precisely the wrong moment, and people were buying the wrong thing at the wrong time and making bad decisions. And then stock markets recovered, the rand strengthened, and everybody went, oh, thank goodness. And now suddenly we're back in a zone where people are going, well, that was stupid. We wasted an opportunity. Quickly, offshore, go, go, go. I'm guessing there's quite a lot of that going on.
You're right. The kind of inbox is starting to flood with questions like, you know, can I cash in my Provident Fund, pay the tax and send the money out? And you know, how quickly can we do this? How fast can we just convert everything, et cetera, et cetera? So I think that there is an element of that. And you know, if it's not that extreme at the moment, just lots of people sitting there with very big, very wide eyes, almost in a state of shock. You know, it's interesting to compare it to reactions, as you say, to last year, to the whole Nenegate thing, which is always, for me, you know, one of the most shocking times we've had. And it feels to me like our nation is more kind of in parallel to that time than to what happened last year. You know, it feels to me like lots of people just sitting there with absolute disbelief.
Okay, so let's not talk about the merits and demerits. I think we've discussed often enough that it is sensible if you live in South Africa, whether you intend to stay in South Africa or not, whatever the case might be, it is sensible to have a proportion of your money outside of the country. South Africa makes up less than 1% of the global economy. Our stock market is minuscule. We've got very few investment options relative to the great excitement of the big world out there in terms of the huge technological revolution that is driving growth in the US stock market, the huge technological innovations of Asia. We just don't have direct access to those other than through NASPAT, which is, you know, the one trick, South Africa's sort of one trick pony of our markets. So there are some pitfalls, and can we focus on the pitfalls this evening? Tell me what not to do. Lots of people want to take money offshore, they're going to be scammed, and there are going to be lots of people willing to charge them huge fees to take their money out the country if that's what they want to do. So what do we need to look out for?
I think there are a couple of starting points. So the first is that decision to convert your rand to another currency is one where lots of people, you know, they spend an enormous amount of time and effort trying to figure out, should they convert it to dollars, to pounds, you know, euros, or maybe a combination? And then, you know, what about the yen? And, you know, what about China? And more and more, you know, people asking about, shouldn't we do a portion into cryptos, et cetera? And I always think when you're sending your money overseas, you know, your first purpose is to diversify your risks and your opportunities away from South Africa. So, you know, worrying too much about, you know, having enough exposure to the yen and the euro and the dollar and the pound, I think it kind of distracts you from the real purpose of what you're doing. And the real purpose is diversification. And so as a starting point, you know, I think rather choose one currency and try not to be too clever. To me, when we try and second guess what the markets are going to do, we end up making a lot of mistakes as human beings. So if it's me and I'm just looking for diversification, I would say just, I'm going to buy the dollar. It's the world's biggest currency. And I'm not going to worry too much about it, because actually what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy a global investment. So I'm going to buy things that are, you know, in America, in the UK, in Europe, in China, in, you know, the rest of Asia and Japan. And so they're all ultimately going to get priced back to the dollar. That doesn't mean all my investments are in America only in dollars. So focusing on all these different currencies, I think, you know, is a mistake. And secondly, when you convert your rands, you're trying to bulk up your money as much as possible, because you need to limit the transaction costs you're going to be charged. And I think that's something that people lose focus on. They focus on the convenience and the speed, and then they realize after the fact that, you know, their bank charged them 2%, you know, as a commission, and then another 0.5% extra in the difference between the buying price of the of the dollars and the selling price. And before they know it, you know, they've gone backwards by a lot. And all they needed to do was actually, you know, focus on being efficient and doing as much of the capital as possible at the best price possible. So first mistake is don't buy too many currencies at once, rather buy one. You know, if you're doing a huge amount of money and a huge amount of money, I think for people in this context would be kind of, you know, over the 5 million rand. You know, once you're over the 5 million, then maybe you start to diversify your currency purchases as well. But below that, one currency, do dollars, don't worry too much about it. And then the second bit, you're going, yep.
No, you're sorry. Can I not breathe? Just one breath in. I was going to interrupt, but, you know, I'm so used to it.
I knew you were going to interrupt. So I thought, well, give it a go and see what happens. So I think the second big issue will be where you put your money, where your actual money is going to live. Now, you know, if you've heard us talk over the years, you're going to be, you know, inclined to you know, follow Warren Buffett or, you know, follow, you know, buy Apple or, you know, buy Microsoft. All of those are sensible. I'm not saying that they're not good ideas, but the critical point is, if you're going to buy, for example, Warren Buffett's company, Berkshire Hathaway, that means you might well be buying a share listed on the stock exchange in America. Sounds all good and well. You know, it's the biggest stock exchange around. It's a, you know, buying Berkshire Hathaway is a, you know, never going to be a really stupid idea. The only problem is that when you do that and you have more than $60,000 in America in investments as a non-resident, you need to be careful of something called CITES tax. And that's basically just, for want of a better word, it's going to be inheritance taxes or death duties. And so if any money you have in America that's worth more than $60,000, if you pass away, you're going to pay the American receiver of revenue, their IRS, 40% of the value of your investments over $60,000. And that should be a huge red flag for everybody. So, you know, so we all get excited about, you know, buying our exchange traded funds, the Vanguard exchange traded funds, or the Berkshire Hathaway shares in America, and you know, we think we're doing a great job for ourselves and our family. But then, you know, the unexpected happens, we pass away, and 40% of our hard-earned savings are being given away to a tax man who's never given us a single benefit in our lives. And so I think that's a huge issue that a lot of people just miss. And unfortunately, you're going to pay a similar sort of rate of tax if you had your money sitting in the UK. The amount is more, so it amounts over £325,000. And you might well be paying similar kinds of taxes if you had your money sitting in Germany or France or, you know, anywhere in mainland Europe. So that's a huge issue that we just need to be really careful about when we invest our money. And and it's called the domicile, so where your money lives. And to me, the constructive thing to do there is look at places like Ireland, the Channel Islands, that's Jersey, Guernsey, Isle of Man, a place like Switzerland or Malta, because those places, they don't charge double taxes. They are not going to charge a non-resident in those countries any form of tax. So that means you are still going to pay tax, but you're only going to pay tax in South Africa. And I think that's a critical point when we're looking at where we send our money. And then the other big one is make sure that you don't need another will in another country. You know, so for example, if you pass away as a South African with a South African will and you've got investments in Switzerland, you're okay because they recognize the South African will and the South African letters of executorship. But, you know, for example, if you're currently working in Dubai and you pass away there, you might be exposed to a different set of laws completely. And you might need a different will there. And if you haven't got a proper will and you've still got your South African will, you might really have a huge issue there, or your beneficiaries definitely will. So I think that those are probably the first two big issues, Bruce, is, you know, converting your currency and the second, where your money lives.
And it's the thing that people don't think about. I mean, yeah, sure, the currency thing maybe is a bit more obvious, but that domicile of money, it's mad. It really is mad. But it does matter, and it matters more than you can ever imagine. I think in the US, it's the value of over $60,000. In the UK, it's over £325,000, which in real money is an awful lot of money. That's like 7 million rand. But at the same time, you know, you mustn't be thinking just of next week or tomorrow. You've got to be thinking of 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. Hopefully that money grows in value and you end up with a tax problem. But you've got to be cognizant of that tax consequence for the future, because what a pain it would be if you don't take cognizance of that, and everything you were trying to protect your beneficiaries from ends up coming to naught because you didn't think about it nearly hard enough. Okay, Warren, so that's a good one. Thank you very much for that. And still, for the vast majority of us, you could just sit in South Africa and buy a global fund. And, you know, yes, the money comes back to you in rands, but you're not doing the fancy stuff. You are just, you know, your money lives, works offshore, but lives at home, perhaps.
Not a bad idea. I think especially if you're doing, let's say, a monthly debit order. You know, I mean, most people building up money don't have the luxury of sending out R1 million at a time, or 3 or 4 million rand at a time. They're going to be doing their, you know, 5, 10, 15,000 rand debit orders. And that's an enormously expensive way to kind of convert your rands to dollars and send it out and then try and make an investment on the other side. So doing monthly debit orders into rand-based but global investments is really, I don't think, is a bad idea at all. In the exchange-traded fund world, those would be they would generally be called global funds. In the unit trust world, they've got a horrible name. They're called feeder funds, and the reason is because it's a South African unit trust that feeds money into a global unit trust, and I don't think it's a bad idea. However, when you start to get to a decent size of money, and again, I think that's somewhere around 500,000 rand. I would seriously suggest that you convert that money and send it out, and the reason I say that is kind of not so much what's happened this week, although that does raise some scary prospects for a lot of us, but it's just that we don't know how policies change in the future. We don't know what can happen, and so to get that diversification and making sure that you've got a spread of assets in multiple countries, in multiple currencies, does make a lot of sense to me. I think, now, even though you get the investment diversification benefit now of these feeder funds or global ETFs, over time, try and build up the money. You know, if you never have to leave South Africa and everything goes brilliantly here, wonderful. You've still got the diversification. But if you do have to, at least you've got some peace of mind that you've got multiple risks covered.
Okay, good. Then a question this evening from somebody who directed it to me, but I'm directing it to you. It's called Passing the Buck. Looking at the current situation, the looting in the country, coupled with the lockdown, also the value of the rand to the dollar, will this be the right time to buy shares? I know you like the timing questions. What I learned is that you have to buy when prices are low, and such as when the right time is approaching, your value will increase. Is this the right time? Ooh, you're going to have a field there with that question.
The Money Show. Personal finance with Warren Ingram.
So quite briefly, I think you could deal with this one quite quickly, Warren, in terms of timing the market and people's attitude towards, oh, now the rand is a bit stronger, we better invest now, or share markets are up, or share markets are down, whatever it is. Timing is such a fool's errand, in my view. What's yours?
I agree. And I think, history proves that it's incredibly difficult to be a good market timer. And I think just to understand the reason for that is, you always make three decisions when you decide to make a market timing decision. It's not just one decision. So for example, if you believe in market timing, that means that you believe you have the ability to buy shares. You know, if we're talking about shares now, you believe you have the ability to buy shares when they are cheap. And so that means that you have some kind of foresight into what's going to happen in the future. And so the price that you're paying today tells you that the share is cheap. And so, for example, just in real time in the last week, that means you were buying shares on Monday when the retail sector was getting hammered, because you knew that the shares were suddenly cheap and that they were going to jump up in value. So your first decision is you have to buy the shares when they're cheap. Then your second decision is you're going to have to sell them when you know they are expensive, when you know that they are about to turn over and go down in price again. So that's a very difficult decision to make. You know, we might know, for example, when the stock markets are carrying on and they're running and running and running, that we start to say, well, gee, things are pricey. And a lot of us have been saying that about Naspers for a very long time. But guess what? It just kept on going for almost decades now, and certainly has powered ahead. So you've got to make that decision right, and you've got to sell. Then you've got to make another decision, which is then you've got to wait for the thing to fall over, the share price, and then buy it again when it's cheap again. And history shows that fund managers, that stockbrokers, that private investors, they don't get those three decisions consistently right with investments. They might get the one right. They might buy cheap. They might sell when things become quite expensive, but they can't do the next leg, which is buy cheap again. That it's almost impossible. And one of my favorite studies of all time is one by three academics called Brinson, Hood, and Bebauer. Fabulous names together. But they would say in the real world with real money, market timing will move your money up or down by about 2% over a long period of time. So out of every 100%, only 2% will be determined by market timing. And this isn't theory. This is looking at in the real world with real portfolios of money, what have investors done, and they managed to get it, to have a 2% impact. That's just a waste of time. In reality, I love the question in terms of, if things are cheap, should I buy? Yes, you should. But then you should be saying, I'm buying and my holding period is for forever. Then by all means, that's a great time to do it.
Absolutely. And the fact is, if you sit on the sidelines waiting for the right moment, you're going to miss 100 right moments before you finally commit 10 years down the track, by which time you've missed out on 10 years of compounding. So don't be caught out by waiting on the sidelines. Very briefly, quick phrase of the week for you, Warren. What is a bear market? Is this you making a prediction or is it just a random choice of phrase?
No, it's not. No predictions. You're making me nervous now. Definitely no predictions at all. So a bear market is when the stock market crashes, but it's not a small crash. It's generally, it's not an academic term, but it's generally when the stock market falls by more than 20% in a very short space of time. So if that happens, then you'll start to hear, the punters saying that we're in a bear market now and the world's ended and everyone's really gloomy. And so, that's our phrase, bear market.
Thank you, Warren Ingram at Galileo Capital.